Good morning. We're figuring stuff out here. Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Bitcoin Veterans. We've got a couple hosts. I'll be one of them. We got Captain. We got some people coming up. But good to have you here. Bob is having some time off, some much-needed R&R. And so we're going to just have a good show today. I think Captain's still coming up.
There you go. I'm on you, Texas. Just switching over from the BV one to co-host here. But yeah, thank you, Texas. General ground rules, no straight coins, no violence, and come up, volunteer to speak. There's not a specific structure today, but we'll definitely try to see where the conversation takes us.
Good morning, Pubby. How you doing this morning?
Oh, good, man. Yeah, Bob, enjoy a day off there. And yeah, we'll see where it goes. Happy hump day, everybody. And yeah, looking forward to this. No real topic, it looks like. So I guess anything's game. But hey,
yeah,
good interviews. Yeah, man, let's do it.
Neil, how you doing, bud?
I'm doing quite well, quite well. Since I have to be productive, I'm already just like slamming coffee, so we're a little bit more wired than most days.
Let's go. BFP, good morning.
Good morning, Text Toast.
All right. Well, we can roll right through. Actually, kind of some things that I wanted to, it's just like topical news stuff, kind of roll through the dib that we get, that Bitcoin Veterans puts out every morning, the daily intelligence bulletin, kind of has some good points to it. We got a 50% tariff on India kicks in. They got heavy rainfall. We got drone debris sparking a roof fire. I've been interested about that because I'm like, why don't they just, instead of these little, you know, bombs that they're dropping with these drones, why don't you just set everything on fire with them? I've been curious about that, why they don't just burn everything. But yeah, a lot going on. Ukraine is still going on. Gaza. Did you see the hospital double tap? That was pretty interesting little hit job there. And then Netanyahu making the rounds on some more American podcasts. So that's pretty cool. I don't know. Anything you want to hit, Captain?
Recent news, no. But have a few topics. Bigger picture, wanted to touch on, see what people can share, like sovereign individual thesis, demonetization of real estate, and perhaps healthcare and fiat food.
I have a quick story here for you guys.
Send it.
You gave me an idea there. So, yeah, the drones, yeah, that's an interesting thing on what they can do, especially when we're talking about forest fires and kill. And sometimes it gets out of control and you're taking civilian lives. Not that it matters, but back in, during Vietnam, there's a guy, they were taking ideas from everywhere in the country and a civilian sent in this idea. He understood in Japan, you know, all the homes, they're made of wood, wood and rice paper. But they ran this through, all the technical abilities and were training it. They were going to train bats. They're going to strap the bats with incendiary devices and release them all over Japan. And what they were going to do was they would go up underneath the eaves of the buildings and they would just light them on fire and cause like just mass wildfires throughout the cities. This is a legit thing they were thinking of doing. Google it. Don't trust, verify, as we say.
Yeah. If I remember it right, I think the firebombing of Tokyo, killed more people than the atomic bomb. If I remember,
that's correct.
Just because the whole thing went up. Yeah.
And I think Dresden too. I mean, in Germany, it's a misnomer that nuclear bombs killed relatively low to people.
Good morning. What a uplifting topic we find ourselves discussing.
Hey, the sun's shining today. It's still a beautiful day.
I'm happy to be here, but it's sad to always reflect on the tragedies and the atrocities of the past and current times.
But we have this bright orange future. Neil's got his hand up. What say you?
Yeah, I just, you just struck me, you're talking about that sovereign individual thesis. I didn't quite know what you meant by that, but it's been something that I've been thinking about, honestly, for this like past week. This like, you know, we have this concept of like the boating accident, and that ethos is antithetical to like the come and take it ethos. And like they're both true. They're both pointing at something true. And I've been trying to wrestle in my mind, like, which one of those rhetorical catchphrases is the more sovereign? Like, you know, cause like the boating accident is this kind of like almost passive, you know, like, oh, can't touch me. Like I'm sovereign, do, 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 do. And the other one is the more in your face, like, fuck you, you know, like you can't touch me. And like when we think about ourselves as like an individual and that relation to society, civilization, I mean, like, I don't know, like it's, I'm really torn on which one I think is like actually embodies sovereignty better.
Those are two types of different sovereignties in different scenarios, and you can live in both in today's world, right? There's a very interesting podcast I listened to recently called Unbounded. Now this guy goes by the handle of Colonial, but he talked about NIMS and being anonymous in the digital realm. And what that means for sovereignty, right? Because sovereignty is control. It is the ability to create the exception. And so we have the ability now with cryptographic keys and Bitcoin and other freedom tech to be sovereign in the digital world. And when the digital and the physical bleed over, that's where the problems occur, right? So those two points that you pointed to, one is, you know, purely in the digital realm, but the boating accident, like how does anybody know that you have Bitcoin in the first place, right? How does your adversary know you have Bitcoin in the first place? And that is something that, the KYC, the illicit activity of KYC and building giant databases of asset ownership and tools for surveillance and control, is a risk. It is a threat vector that everyone in this ecosystem lives in. And if you look at it from, you know, military lens, right? You know, the art of war, right? Deception, is like inherent. So the ability to selectively reveal yourself, which is privacy, right? Privacy is the ability to selectively reveal yourself, is a threat vector and is an aspect of warfare that I think we as veterans can all reflect on and sort of like understand intuitively, right? You can't shoot at an adversary you don't see or you don't know where they're at, right? So in the same way, like the boating accident is one thing where it's more of the physical, like, yeah, fuck you, come and find my keys because I'm telling you that I lost them. Right? They can still come to your house, knock on your door, find your 12 words or whatever, coerce you in the physical realm. They have to know you have the Bitcoin first, right? And that's the threat vector that is the KYC system, that is, you know, engulfing Bitcoin. But the opposite side of that is you can go buy in cash, a phone, device, whatever, using public internet to set it up or set it up all offline. And with diligence, with discipline and rigor, which again, military veterans are very familiar with, in general, just like OPSEC, et cetera, you can be anonymous and have sovereignty over your digital life by leveraging the tools that are freedom tech, Bitcoin, Nostr, all of the open source tooling out there available to the individual today to assert their sovereignty over their digital space.
Thank you, Mining Goblin. Gonna steal, you have some good, quotes in there. Gonna steal a couple. Like privacy is selectively revealing yourself. Thank you.
Two really good books.
Before we jump, we got a couple people who are, Neil, were you talking about when you asked Sovereign Individual, are you familiar with the book Sovereign Individual?
No, I haven't read that book.
Okay. Quick rundown. Written in 1997, same year as the Fourth Turning Book, they termed the coin cybercurrency or cryptocurrency back in 1997, and they envisioned with the dawn of the internet we would have an internet-based money that is outside of the apparatus of the state, and that people would be working online. It would be easier to move from country to country, and that relationship would change from the industrial age, where we're kind of like employees or almost right citizens of the state, to we're customers. You know, we still need protection. We still need that monopoly of violence in some manner, but agrarian age, then industrial age about 15th century, and then information age transitioning at the dawn of the 21st century. And they made a lot of crazy predictions that, you know, here we are 30 years later that have started to manifest. I think we got a couple hands up. Pablo?
No, BFP was up first, man. Go cool. BFP.
Oh, yeah, I was just actually going to talk about that book. That book is excellent, and it does predict, like, COVID and Bitcoin in esoteric way. But another book that dovetails very nicely with that and the NIMS that Mining Goblin was talking about is called True Names by Werner Vinge. And that's a great, fun read because it's kind of where virtual reality came from. And I got that tip to read that book from Laser Hoddle, I think. But I think he's only on Nostr nowadays. But
correct.
I still don't know who that guy. I don't even know who Laser is. I just know him by his NIM. And right. He's a good example of the Mining Goblins, NIMs, and how we are moving into this digital universe. So I was just throwing that out there. But that book, Sovereign Individual, is fantastic.
Yes, it is. Pablo?
Hey, yeah, so, yeah, I like the attack vector things, and you always got to be thinking of this and where we're going. I don't know if you guys, this is probably about 6 months ago, maybe a year. There's a gentleman who was going through, I don't know if it was a divorce or breakup of his business, but they knew because he had Bitcoin that had been on an exchange that he had obviously purchased some Bitcoin. But before like the trial and assets, he sent it to different wallets, all right? So he put it out in cold storage. But here's the interesting thing. And look, well over 90% of people, most of their Bitcoin is KYC. But the court came back and they were fining him for every day. So the whole thing of, you know what, boating accident, you know, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, they were fining him anyway. They were saying, well, you better find it. If not, these are still your fines. And it was, I don't know if anyone ever saw the outcome of that. And this wasn't insubstantial. You know, it was like $5,000 a day that they were fining this guy because he had taken his Bitcoin from an exchange and they had absolutely no recourse to find it. So, you know, those are the attack vectors of, things like that, unrealized gains. Wait until that one comes out. Yeah. We noticed you've held Bitcoin for two halvings and you've had these gains. We're taxing you on it. There's a lot, man, still to come down the pipe here for us. So just wanted to throw that out there.
Render unto Caesar.
Yes. And render unto God. Amen. Unto God. Thanks, Pablo. Winch or Neil, hands up.
No, I don't
know. Yeah, I had mine up. What Pubby said, basically, think of all the judgments that are released on people that are insolvent. I mean, you can't squeeze blood out of a turnip. So if a guy has Bitcoin and that's his only asset and he's bankrupt and you can't get it from him, I mean, that's the thing. They can issue as many judgments as they want or fines or whatever you want to call it. If he doesn't want to give you his Bitcoin, he can say he donated it to the YMCA for all, you know, or the Bitcoin veterans. So that's the problem with, it kind of makes all these judges and courts a little bit more feeble or, you know, non-relevant. All the money in the world makes you, when you have a bunch of money, it makes you easy to attack because they hold you hostage to it.
The classic honeypot phenomenon. It's like I'm near Washington DC, right? It's the classic, it's a parasitic culture, whether you're, you know, military government employee, contractor, most of the wealthy zip codes in the country are in Northern Virginia. You know, why is that? And it's a effective ROI to lobby here, to seek here, because all the concentration of wealth being harvested and sucked into the center of gravity we call Washington DC or the swamp.
Yeah, you think about it, the richest people in the world need the protection of government to protect their wealth. You know, poor people don't need protection. Nobody goes after them. All they can do is take their life and enslave them and, you know, basic stuff. They're not as, they don't need them. The wealthy keep the government alive.
Well, that's an interesting, on that note, there's an interesting, like, dynamic too. There's a lot more community though in the lower class of the financial, like the poor people have a lot more stronger community because that's where you get your security from. You know, your neighbor falls down or their house burns down and, you know, they got less or maybe just a little more than you, you go help them out. And then conversely, at the other end of the spectrum, you have money and then resources to expend for other people that are not necessarily in your direct community to, you sort of outsource those aspects to it.
Yeah, you're talking about social capital, you know, like that's, I would argue that the social capital is the most sovereign of all wealth. Like, it's what makes you rich.
Well, you can see the outcomes. It's like with the rich people, if they don't have that, you know, I've been around rich people, I've been around poor people. And I've seen that the rich people without that, any sort of, they try to outsource that social capital too much. And it's going to fuck up your kids. It's going to fuck up their mental health. They're not going to be able to relate to people properly. You know, that's where it becomes disjointed. And so I think even the rich are, you know, the old rich kind of realize that. And then they create these insular communities, amongst themselves. But, there's kind of an in between where you think you can outsource it, and you go too far. And then it doesn't work out, but.
It's a reflection on empires as well. How, you know, that full history of working your ass off, you know, plowing the dirt, you're building and growing and you build something and you reach that point and someone, you know, builds a company. And like you're saying, the children, that they get raised up with this, with all these nice things. And what do they say? By the third generation, everything is gone because they've just had everything handed to them. And by the time your grandchildren come along, that's it. There was no, they don't have to build anything anymore. And I think that's probably one of the hardest things it may be for Bitcoiners is you're teaching your children, you know, that the currency is being debased, the value of this, the value of that is, they won't have to care really. They won't have to care about, money or being taken care of. They will have that, but it's keeping them motivated to understand how quickly it can be gone and how to focus them on things that, give them fulfillment, help their family grow and just appreciate it. That's the big thing is appreciating, this value that you didn't necessarily create at the time, but you better take care of it.
Yeah. It teaches them. Responsibility.
What's the old Saudi quote? My father rode a camel. I drive a Rolls Royce. My son flies a jet airplane. His son will ride a camel. Except on steroids. Hey, Winch, I found your quote. You were talking about Sovereign Individual book. And again, 1997, predicting. So here's what it said about biological risk and border control. They said 1997, for this reason, it is to be expected that one or more nation states will undertake covert action to subvert the appeal of transience. Travel could be effectively discouraged by biological warfare, such as the outbreak of a deadly epidemic. This could not only discourage the desire to travel, it could also give jurisdictions throughout the globe an excuse to seal their borders and limit immigration. 1997, man.
Tyranny of place. That's exactly, you know, for us to have to check all these boxes to move about this world is just ridiculous. Like these are other men and women that are holding us in the place, you know, we can't move around. And that's a form of control, just like the currency is a form of control. the tyranny of place with COVID, that's what they really wanted, is control of your movement. And they had it for a while until people woke up.
Good point. Excellent point. Texas.
We got a few new speakers up, AC and Rico. Good morning, fellas. Y'all got anything to add?
Bonjour. Good morning. I mean, I always think of your nation as kind of like a concentration camp for your person. I've lived in 5 nations now, and, it always changes. I mean, being an outsider, just kind of like looking in, you have this edge about you. You're not really trusting. And so I get a lot of slack because I live in France, but I push heavily back on the American mindset, and it's not to be personal, but I notice people get very triggered when I say things, and it's like your concentration camp is the nation. Like, you're identifying, you're protecting them by, like, I mean, it was like a lot of Germans left during Weimar because of what they were dealing with. So I'm not anti-American. I'm just saying your concentration camp is the nation that you live in tyranny of. It's the Chinese know, they get it, but yeah, I just think we're at a, like, a fluxion point right now.
Inflection point.
Yeah, in my mind, it's like, you know, America is the frontier where you can push those boundaries. Like, you know, places like Europe and France in particular are America, but worse in many ways, and kind of what you're talking about. So I think that's probably where you get the most pushback, is people are like, what the fuck are you talking about, dude? You're in France. Like, I mean, I get criticizing, you know, the tyranny we face in America, but in comparison, it's much less, but that can also lull people to sleep on getting to the important issues and kind of pushing back on and exerting your freedoms. 'Cause if you don't, then that's where, you know, government will creep in and limit you, or press you into a corner. So.
I think the American empire holds it all in place, and all these other European countries are, you know, they don't have any close to a match of our military. So America is just so much more spread out. So it's hard to, you know, keep these checkpoints. There's not, and the states are all interlinked, so you can just move about the country like it's a huge camp. So it's not you don't feel like you're at all locked in, but as soon as you move outside the country, oh, what are you doing? You got any stuff with you we can steal?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I say that to see, like, it always goes back and forth between, you know, 'cause I'm a nationalist, like I believe in nations and borders and, like, you know, people being able to build whatever country they want. But, you know, in Bitcoin, we have this decentralized mindset. And in my mind, it's like, you can see in how America progressed, what it started as, all the different, even between the Articles of Confederation, the Civil War, you know, Lincoln unifying it. And then you have all these processes, like we've seen all of world history or a lot of political history just in America. And you can kind of see how it was decentralized and how it has slowly crept towards a centralized entity. And so now we're at the point where, like, okay, this is probably centralized enough in a lot of ways. How do we get away from that? And so I think us here, we see Bitcoin as a vehicle for that. At least to kind of, you know, break some chains of power in the economic sense. And now it's like, okay, now how do we progress that into a kind of a political movement? Because just life is political. To try to shy away from that, I think is like an anarchist, you know, that's their folly. It's like this libertarian mindset, of live and let live, and just like, you know, let people do whatever they want and not get extremely political. It's like, I think you can fall into a trap. But as we all gain power, it's like you're going to want to express that, that economic power that you now hold in reflecting, you know, your values in the community. And you do that through politics and through lobbying. And it's like all these things are kind of dirty words, but it's almost like they're necessary. And I don't know how to get around it.
It's an interesting point, Texas. I'm sure we all know Average Gary here. We're at the Winchester, his Shenandoah meetup in Virginia. The week, and he mentioned, he goes, you know, Kyle, I used to be really libertarian in the sense like no left, no right, just leave it alone, ignore it. But the problem is you may not be interested in politics. Politics is interested in you, just like war. And perhaps it's focusing on local politics. As the famous Tip O'Neill said, all politics is local. Your local school board or your county commissioner or, you know, sheriff, mayor. But that we are social animals, and especially get past that Dunbar number of 150 people, a military company, 150 give or take. We have to play these games to keep the peace and also promote productivity and prosperity.
Neil, I see your hand. Go ahead, brother.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, you know, kind of bringing like the from the bottom up philosophy, you know, just like it's really important to remember, like, you know, this human being, you know, like is a composite of the individual and the collective. Like it's a both. And it's important. Like there's no, the collective has primacy, just meaning like the individual comes from the collective. So the collective is there first, and that's what springs forth and even enables the individual to be. So it's like, you know, all how we mediate those relations. I mean, that's what society is. So baked into our being, you know, we have non-voluntary relations with other people that we didn't choose. Like I didn't choose to exist with all of you, but like we share this earth. We share this moment together non-voluntarily. And each of us is, you know, we have, there's an asymmetrical power dynamic between us. Like these things are just baked into the cake and we have to, we're trying to mediate them. We're trying to overcome those obstacles. So it was like, the way we connect socially, you know, it's either through persuasion or coercion. Like those are the two ways that it forks. And it's like, you know, when we're talking about a concentration camp society, like we're talking about bad state, it's like, yeah, because people are using coercion. They're using force against others, not getting consent, not, you know, they're not dignifying the other individuals as human beings. So it's like, yeah, you're going to have a lot of problems. And, you know, the thing that brings me a lot of hope is that, you know, when you follow the logic between coercion and persuasion, I mean, that's what really creates the win-lose scenarios or the win-win scenarios, cooperation versus extraction. And in terms of productivity, cooperation has an asymmetrical advantage to extraction. Like, you know, like this is why open source stuff, you know, will always outcompete the closed source system. It's like when you have to exert energy to close it off and protect it or whatever, like you just can't compete with the open. So it's just like, that's why throughout history, even though it seems that like, oh yes, coercion and, you know, this force, it always looks like the huge Goliath that's going to win. It's like people will always, like cooperation and abundance, like that will always prevail in principle, you know. Like, I mean, I guess if the coercion smashes it and like civilization is just toast and zero, you know, if you turn civilization off, then yeah, there's, it gets game over. But I think as long as there's people and we're playing this game of civilization, I think cooperation always wins out in the end. And, I don't know. That's why I keep fighting and keep pushing forward. Cause it's like, I'm going to push this edge so I can pass on, hopefully not a camel to my children.
Also, I don't know. I'm a somewhat of a Civilization 5 player myself. And, usually I conquer the world by, centralization and control and, cooperation. You know, I might get really rich, but if I want to like control a bunch of territory, I have to kind of smash a bunch of stuff and make hard rules.
cultural influence maximalist, dude. You got, like, you want your music, your culture, your poems, your architecture, your everything about your civilization there to be so awesome that everyone else uprises against their civilization to convert to yours. That's the cultural victory in Civ 5. Anyway, let's not tangent too far.
Yeah,
that, but,
yeah, I prefer to go the religious route and subvert them from the inside that way.
I mean, are those two mutually exclusive?
Oh man. All right. Pubby doesn't know what we're talking about because he's too old to play video games, but I see his hand up. Go ahead.
No, I think Rico was first. So go ahead, Rico.
Yeah, no, that's hilarious. I didn't get that either, but I agree with what Neil was talking about. This coercion, versus like voluntary or control versus participation. And I like that with Bitcoin because you see that right now, like all these large institutions trying to get in and the whales can do as they kind of wish and just sit here and distribute. Not really so much that, but like this idea that we're growing a new system because the control has reached its limit, the walls. People are trying to step out of the walls of control and society is used as a weapon against those who are individuals who are going against this change, the anarchy. I guess I'll say that I like Bitcoin because it allows creativity to reach these natural rights that we want, whether it's movement, speech, transaction, privacy. Like these are things that we have reached the pinnacle of getting those taken away from us, extracted from us, unless we volunteer to be a part of it and that it's used against us. So I like the fact that it's, I think we're in a very, when I say inflection point earlier, I was talking about for creative minds, creativity. Which is like, that is how you gamify for a change. Like if we're at the end of this old game, then, and it's still in control, people are already building the new system, the new game, and they're already participating in that and leaving this old system that they're just not, they don't want to be extracted out of, extracted from their time and stuff like that. Control.
I love you all. Have to drop The Second Renaissance by Bitcoin Veterans' very own Mike Hobart talks all about that. And I think you're right, Rico. But I love you all. Have an above average day.
Yeah, Mike's good. Yeah. Hey, I won't have to, I do remember when Pong was released in the mid-70s there. And I was like 5 years old, maybe, and Atari, all those original games. And at the time, yeah, you didn't, what do we have now? I always loved the term panopticon, the digital panopticon that we are in, man. And I'm looking through here, even just, you know, my journey, what brought me here 8 years ago was you notice that debased currency coming in. You like this thing, wow, censorship resistance, you control keys. What I didn't realize from 8 years ago was how much things were going to change on the other fronts, the tyrannical overreach, the controls. And when you look at it, you come in here just, you know, come for number, go up. The rabbit holes you go down now because you finally realize, well, what the hell is it good having this Bitcoin if everything else is so controlled that there are no sovereign individuals, sovereign areas to go to? I see Jimmy down there. Shout out to him as a listener. You know, he does his sovereign citadel on Sundays. I didn't realize at the time how important that would be and must coexist and go hand in hand with Bitcoin. You know, what's the use of this Bitcoin when supply chains are just broken down? And it doesn't really matter. You know, it doesn't matter if you can reach out to your farmer. Well, what's the use when they got roads shut down? There's no trucking. So when you're here, you're going to hear about this more, this sovereign thing. And it's a nice rabbit hole to go down, man. Just, it keeps you thinking. It keeps you questioning the leaders and why they do what they do. Everything that we talk about from the World Economic Forum, IMF, the slavery they keep certain countries. And look, we're in a prison here. In the U.S., just like you, except we just got a nicer, bigger prison. That's all. Okay. I know a lot of you guys, it sucks exactly where you are. Shout out to my Bitcoiner friends. I know you guys are going through some hell right now. But this is what Bitcoin is. This Bitcoin experience is more than just money. The money, yeah, that may draw your eye to it. Of course it will. But once you get in here and you open your eyes and you have to question everything that you were raised on, you know, this freedom, like, what do you mean you have to take your shoes? I'm looking at my grandparents now, would shake their head. You got to take your shoes off to go through security. You can't just walk to your plane. All these things that slowly, just been taken away from us. that you just don't realize this generation is waking up and they're swimming in it. And you have this older generation that is hard to fathom saying there's no way it would ever get like that. There's no way. Yet here we are. Thankfully we have, you know, the spaces like this where, you know, people can come in from Bitcoin and everyone's got a different rabbit hole they like to go down. And hopefully you're here listening. You'll find one or two and lots of great people on stage and anyone for that matter, anyone that's listening that you see, they're here for a reason. Okay. I can crash a plane there.
Well, and this something that I thought of this morning, and this is kind of a tangent, but, you know, as I saw Elon more, starships exploding, and kind of thinking about how Elon Musk talks about how his, you know, his whole idea of getting off planet and becoming a multiplanetary species is to become anti-fragile. And while he can do that for space and that, I think that's true, but it's like the same thing is happening here, whereas as these systems have become centralized and more controlled, they also be, the whole thing becomes more and more fragile. And so you have this decentralized effect that you have with Bitcoin and starting these smaller, more insular communities. It actually makes the whole system and a society, more anti-fragile and allows for, you know, natural disasters and, you know, economic collapse or any of these other things. It's like it softens there's like a landing there. If things are decentralized enough and there's enough power distributed through the society, then we become a lot more anti-fragile as well. So I see that as like, you know, something that Elon should be able to understand. And, you would think that he would be pushing, for that along with his kind of expansionist decentralization to Mars and the moon and all that.
I would disagree that Elon Musk really wants it to succeed on a short-term basis because he's got a lot. He's got a lot of gravitas. There's a, you know, he's got a heavy grip right now, but maybe in the long run, I would say that Bitcoin is it's the new rails. It's like the underground railroad, and those who are in it are building the future banks and the electric companies of the future, these mining facilities and the data centers will probably be leveraged as well for governments and whatever, who knows what's going to happen in the future with that section. But I would just say that anybody building on Bitcoin or using it and onboarding people, we are already building the new world. I mean, we're done with it. For me, it was a call to arms when I was living in Paris during the Gilets Jaunes. And, that was 2017. That was a heavy year for me in France. And, we have a lot of revolutions here and a lot of different, uprises here in France. If they give them anything to argue or fight about or just not go to work, they will. And so Bitcoin is that. They're just saying that we want our rights back. We want to have what we want. And, we may not agree on everything and which nation is the best, but we can agree on certain things that Bitcoin protects and adheres to. And, there is consensus that we need to reach to. And so it forces people to have to get over their personal selves for the greater good. And I think that's what we need. That's why I don't have faith in a lot of the big billionaires, but, I do have faith in the creative pleb that's working set something in the garage to just, you know, if everybody's doing that, it's like you were saying, it's like just the mass trying to, you know, I'll land it there. I kind of lost my thought, but just in general, I think that this is where we're going is we have to build it up because the top down is literally to just keep everything the way it is.
Yeah. Excellent point. Jimmy?
Okay. I've been sure somebody's talking. Good morning. How you guys doing? Thanks for the shout out, Bubby. Yeah, I do believe that, you know, your supply chain is really important these days anywhere you live, because I think there could be disruptions in major distribution. And if you think about it, why is Bitcoin successful? Because of decentralization. It's why Nostr's successful. It's what nature does. So we're just copying nature. And I seriously believe, you know, listening to Elon Musk, he talks about we need to be able to get off this planet because we're destroying it. I don't believe that. I believe we're destroying our habitat. I don't believe we can destroy the planet as easy as we think. It can go through transformations that we can't survive. It can survive. We can't. And it's really stupid. And the fact is, we could live much more intelligently on this planet and not be damaging it. And it's a biology. It's an incredible thing when you start studying it hard. Everything's connected. Everything helps one another. It's like we have waste that we don't need. We're idiots the way we live on this planet. And if we just get smarter about how we do it, I believe we could have larger populations, much healthier people. They're just trying to feed people. They don't care about nutrition. So what do? You have the population of a bunch of zombie slugs out there. This is ridiculous. You want nutritious, healthy people. And yeah, we haven't been demanding that. So that's why you vote with your money. Get out of the distribution centers, leave the big box stores, leave the big box processed foods, buy local, support farmers and ranchers, because they'll support you when the distribution centers close, and you'll still be able to get your food. So anyway, these are my thoughts about it. And yeah, it's a bad time in the sense it's going to be a rough time, but it's also a great opportunity to change the way we live. So it's a crisis that creates opportunity. You know, that's, you know, pretty much take it and run with it, be positive, or let it eat you up.
Yeah, it's wild. I have like, and spend most of my time in Texas. And when I go back to the heartland, you know, I just see miles and miles of soy, of just like all this soy. And I'm just like, it just makes me disheartened. I'm like, this is all just crap. You know, especially when you think about how like in those same areas, bison, you know, used to, by the millions, used to roam around, and that's like such a more nutritious food and kind of way to feed people. I get it. It's inefficient in some ways, but, to see the food production that's not nutritious and doesn't really provide the things that we need, specifically with soy, is disheartening, but it also, you just see how fertile the ground is. And it's like so I get disheartened by that, but then I'm like, we can build whatever we want and the land is cheap. And, if you're industrious, I think like we can still terraform the planet is kind of the way I still look at it. It's like, it's ripe for, building whatever society you want, and you can create it as healthy as possible. What do you think?
And we know so little of the oceans. We know so little of this planet in reality and what we can do and where energy comes from and how to create energy. I guarantee you we haven't even tapped into it. It blows my mind that they want to go in. I love space exploration, but why not more knowing what's going on in the oceans? We have things that live on, you know, we were told that we're carbon life forms when we were kids. I was educated. There's no other life form. It's all carbon. That's not true. There's sulfur based animals too. They find them at the bottom of the ocean at these heated vents where the water's super hot. And it's like, what else is there? We have no fucking clue. We have so much to learn.
Yeah. Where's the Bitcoiner billionaire that's going to create a new ocean gate and not use carbon fiber? Because dumbass.
It's something Jimmy was talking about there with the supply chain. And it's not when the supply chain, is gone. Even when it works, you'll notice, when they bring in something like COVID, well, all of a sudden, you've got to cut your shift into thirds. So because of the spacing. So when you had, we'll say you had 60 people on shift that was processing poultry. Well, now they can only do 20 at a time. So what does that do? Yeah. Less product going out the door. Yeah. Guess what? Prices go up and you get priced out of it. The thing with the heartland like that is all the land being bought up, you know, someone like a Bill Gates, whose Malthusian background and depopulation. I'm not concerned so much about that about foreign nations coming in. It's not only the soy that he grows, at what point does he just say, you know what, I'm not growing food here? And the artificial famines and starvations they can generate, man, that's the scary part. And this is the Bitcoin experience that comes for you. You know, 10 years ago, I wouldn't have worried one bit about it. Now, yeah, that's the kind of stuff that wakes me up, man. Gets me reading.
Well, it happens all the time too, because people can just buy crop insurance and then not grow anything, and you're basically getting paid to not grow anything. That happens all the time. So yeah, it's and that's where we get back to like the incentives are all perverse. and messed up. And that's why we're kind of in this new system, is because it has a base of better incentives, and it kind of has a, you know, especially in these, when we get to these, insular or circular economies, you know, you're incentivized to create the healthiest food because you're giving it to your neighbor. And because you're probably going to get the best bang for your buck in the market for it. So it's like all these different things kind of come full circle when you get onto a Bitcoin standard and pry yourself off of fiat. Your whole incentive structure changes.
Yeah, I want to say something on that. It's exactly, because I think Bitcoin said something earlier about like the market. This is a hard time, but like this is a situation that's an opportunity. Maybe it was Jimmy that you were saying that. Like, I know that the market is like everybody's not wanting to invest or even maybe start up their own thing, but like at a very local level, that is not like something you're making money and business out of. That's where you start with your neighbors and like just doing things that are very like only you have that niche. Like this is a good time to like focus that bullish energy on like building something on a very small term. Even if it's just like your first cycle and you're just getting into Bitcoin and like talking about it for that. And like those who have been in a cycle or another one or two, like to like actually start to like build small things around yourself at a local level will like, that doesn't have to be anything you talk about. It's just something that you're doing that is pushing you, because if we're all just sitting here like worried that everything's going to happen, like we're just, this is time. Like that's it. This is the fruit of life. It's just time. And so if like these conversations, like Jimmy, you have some great conversations about what you're doing, and I kind of talk about what I'm doing as well. Like, I can't talk about too much because in Europe it's different. So yeah, but you know, like you don't need to go big, and like it's just the situation is at, it's red right now, but the opportunity is ripe. So I think we need to organize a little bit more and just leverage that creativity. Yeah.
Yeah. I have this idea of, I go back, to my wife's town, and it's a small town, and I go in, it's got a traditional town square with courthouse and everything. It's a beautiful little spot, but, it's got these businesses around the square, and they're always kind of changing over, some kitschy shops. And, there's always like three or four financial institutions, people that are just, you know, managing, or there's a whatever, Edward Jones. There's a, you know, all these different kinds of, people that are trying to help people with their money. And so I kind of had this idea of just creating, you know, each small town having, if you're wealthy enough and you don't have to worry, in Bitcoin terms about stacking as much, and kind of a way you can give back to some of these little communities. It's nothing to buy rent in these places, in these small towns, and get a building and just put up the Bitcoin office right next to Edward Jones. And, just kind of infiltrate and just sit in there and have people come and ask you questions and help them self-custody and, integrate yourself into the, you know, the courthouse is right there. So you got the whole government coming in. You can talk to them at the coffee shop, and they're going to ask you. It's a small town. They're all going to be curious about what is this, one of those eBay stores? That's what it seems like. You know, sell your stuff on eBay, and they'll come in, and, I just have this idea that maybe that's a good move. If I ever have enough time, but that's the big key, is having enough time to do something like that. But it seems like it'd be a good way to give back. What do you think, Jimmy?
Yeah, no. And I wanted to tell you guys, as you struck up an idea with the, during COVID, I'm going to give you an example of these Mexicans. One of my friends we were partying one night, and he was talking about how he drives up what he's doing. Because of COVID, he had to change jobs. He got a job. He was delivering in La Paz and coming back with an empty truck. But he and his wife really wanted to get into farming or vegetables, fruits, and they're really into organic foods. And I'm talking to him, and all of a sudden he hit me and says, guys, you know what we need? You need to make a list of the things that you can get from these organic farmers on the way back from La Paz. Convince the owner that you can fill up the truck on the way back and deliver that fruits and vegetables to people in Cabo. And he says, who would buy it? I says, oh, shit, the Gringos will order it from you. You can have an online order. They set up a system. Within several months, they left the business, got their own truck, and they now have two trucks. they're killing it because they do a loop and they drive around the entire Cape and they collect fruits and vegetables and they do it on subscription and you online more order from the menu, which they put up currently what is available, you know, cause some things run out and you order it and they bring it to you and it's prepaid. It's all set up. These people are just ecstatic with the service and it's growing. And I believe this will happen everywhere. See, these are niche businesses. When you decentralize everything, you end up with a whole bunch of nodes, right? You end up with a whole bunch of businesses. I've known mega farming and mega ranching was wrong when I was a kid because I worked in it and they destroyed the cotton farm my father had acres of salted land, land you cannot grow in anymore because of the chemicals. I worked a cattle ranch that was a good grass fed, incredible cattle ranch, learned how to ranch cattle the old school way, branding and roping and all. I loved it as a kid and it was a good healthy way, but that's not the way. When you go to a commercial cattle farm, this is where they get disease. It's not healthy. Nature doesn't work this way. So this is where I learned a long time ago. I called it, we need to distribute systems. And when I learned the word decentralized, I realized, wow, that's the best word in the world because centralization is the problem. See, when you centralize things, you scale it up by centralizing it, right? Now you've got four major companies that run all the food in America. Now, I give you an example, another example down here in Baja, and I think it's true in the States. I've asked a few people. They said, yeah, if you're buying from a rancher or farmer directly or in organic markets, the prices don't go up like they do in the stores. I'm paying the same for my beef for the last 4 years, all the way through this. And everybody's talking about inflation. I'm like, what inflation? Eggs and bacon, all the meat, it's all the same price. She hasn't upped the prices at all. The ranchers and farmers don't need to. They're because they have a direct, they're not going through third parties, not going through people, distribution, trucking, and all the bullshit that causes the price to go up. You wouldn't believe how many people have hands on your food before it gets to that store. You think you're buying it, and, oh, it's just been in the warehouse, been all over the place. That's not healthy food. And so, you know, if you get direct, you're also going to find it may be a little more expensive. I've had people say it was, but since the price hasn't gone up and everything else has, now it's not. You see, and it's because ranchers and farmers are generally pretty honest people. They want to give you good value, and they're not trying to scam you. Everything in between is fiat games. And fiat is incentivized to make money for stockholders. They don't give a fuck about people. This is the problem with fiat. It dehumanizes, you know, the customer. It makes it so they don't matter. They're just numbers. And, you know, these people aren't evil. They're doing what they're supposed to be doing is make a bunch of money for stockholders. But what they'll do to get there is disgusting. And so this is where if you go to ranchers and farmers, they're honest people. You're going to get honest food. It's just common sense. And you get to know them. They look you in the eye and they go, wow, I really have to charge a bit more or something. But it's not, you know, not easy for them to do that. They know. And if you talk to a farmer who's in Oklahoma, he has a subscription service. He does deliver foods and vegetables to people. And he says, yeah, we don't jack prices. We don't need to. We're independent of that system. Our pricing is based on what we produce and how we produce it. And as the prices go up around, you're going to find that direct is going to be cheaper, I think, than you'll find in these damn stores where they're lying to us.
There's price for inflation, I have to say, because like we sell a lot of vegetables and that there's still price inflation. So it does go up a little bit, but you still, yeah, it's like you pay the same price for meat for the last 7 years.
Last 4 years. I've been buying from the same one the last 4 years. Yeah. I was in COVID.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
And the 2 years before that, I was buying in Cabo during COVID and prices went up. They didn't go up with my butcher either in Cabo. And at one point they did because they said, you know what? We've been charging almost a wholesale price. We didn't even realize we're barely, and I'm like, ooh, but I was moving. So it didn't really matter. The price went up some, but, yeah. And I agree. It can and has to do with trucking. It has to do with production, but
they might just really like you. I think they
I buy all my meat from her. I'm a carnivore. I mean, I spend $800 a month with her, $600 a month with her.
Yeah. They probably don't charge you. That's true. They probably don't raise you because they're not selling at the market. You're getting it private.
A price that I see it in the market. I see it in the store. I mean, it's actually on the, you know, you see it in the case. And now that she has a carniceria, but yeah, it's on a menu and yeah, everybody pays that price. That's not it. What she does do though, on top of that is I'll say I need some bones for soup or I need some liver. No charge. I mean, you know, 4 pounds of liver.
Yeah,
just take it.
For sure.
So I get a lot of for that. Sure. She gives me gifts all the time. That's how she does it. But, you know, this is much cheaper than
that's
you guys
how it
pay.
Is. Yeah.
But at the same time, I've talked to people in the States. Now, it's not like, you know, L.A. It's hard to do it in cities. But in rural areas, not everywhere are these farmers jacking prices up. But it's the boutique farmers, the commercial ones.
But Jimmy, you could say that though certain nations, it's frowned upon to farm your own food at your own home. Like, you know.
Well, that's the advantage.
Like I was.
But we have in Mexico. We have hundreds of thousands, if not millions, not everybody of farms and ranches. So it's not been centralized. It hasn't scaled up like that. The companies that are scaled up are American companies that come in and use the land, but export all the food. And the Mexicans don't like the tomatoes they grow here. Mexicans won't even eat them. They're disgusting. And I go, well, yeah, because they just picked them and they're not any good for another month because they're for shipping. And they go, yeah, but we've held on to them for a month or two and they still don't.
Right. My point is that I think that the law is overreaching natural law rights to grow plants. I mean, unless you're like selling these plants in the market and doing illegal things with the plants, that's different. But like, I think that growing vegetables, specifically foods, like if they're not drugs, if you're not like, you're not growing tobacco and I think you should be allowed to grow tobacco. I'm saying that's a terrible example, but there's certain, like you wouldn't need to grow cocaine. For
no, but
like, you know what I'm saying? Like you should be allowed to grow anything when it comes to eating fruits or vegetables.
I totally agree with you.
You know what I'm saying?
Listen to this. I'm an American born. I'm raised in America. I know the laws and I know what's happened to gardening and all this bullshit, right? Here in Mexico, while we have cartels and have all these problems, we have a genius Supreme Court in the sense that it does uphold your human right. Marijuana, mushrooms, salvia, the strongest psychoactive drug known to man, are legal in Mexico to grow and use. No plant, according to the Supreme Court, can be made illegal to be used by a human. Period. It's not their right to get in the middle.
Really?
Yeah. Now they haven't, it's not legal for me to grow it and sell it. It's not legal for me to distribute it. It's only legal for a person. Like they came here and said, you're growing cannabis. Yeah, but this amount and this, oh, that's fine. And with my hands, they look at me immediately. Oh, you're using it for medicine. Yeah. Okay. And that's what it's for.
I don't think a lot of people know that. Well, maybe I'm just ignorant, but I didn't know you could just grow anything.
Maybe 6 years ago somewhere, but they made this ruling and this is why they had to make marijuana. They decriminalized it. But they haven't really made it. Like, I can order it online. You can buy it in stores and places and things, but it's still questionable because they don't really have cannabis centers. But pharmacies now have all the cannabis gummies, all the cannabis oils, and pharmacies, you know, commercial brands are coming out in the pharmacies. They just don't have, like, they have smoke shops, but they don't really have, what do they call them in the States, you know, pot stores. They don't have that license.
For sure. Head shops.
Yeah. And the reason for this is, and this is what most people that grow it are like, well, no, we just want to be able to grow it. We don't want it to be a business. We don't want the cartel in it. We just want to have our own medicine. And they're okay with that. And they always have been because Mexicans use cannabis and these things as medicine. They didn't start out as drugs to everybody.
Shit.
And so this is where the, you know, Supreme Court, and this is also just so you know, Bitcoin cannot be made illegal in Mexico or any crypto, unfortunately, because
I was going to try to tie it
two in. People say it's a currency. Right. They got sued by some kids that created a currency long before Bitcoin got sued because it was so successful. And the federal bank said, you can't do this. It's a central bank here. And so they sued them and they lost. And the Supreme Court said, any two people say it's a currency, it's a currency. Now, Mexico's fucked up. There's no doubt because cartels own the politicians. The Morena party is cartel. It's a disaster. And that's it.
But the richest guy there, Ricardo Salinas, didn't he just come out and say that like he's like the most Bitcoin advocate in Mexico, and he's like the multi-billion, like the richest man in Mexico, I think.
Okay, he's the third, so he's like the third richest man in Mexico, seventh in the world, I think. He owns Banco Azteca.
Third richest.
Listen, he owns Banco Azteca. He's the CEO of it. He has come out repeatedly. I have him on videos from 2 years ago telling the Mexican people, do not open a bank account. Buy Bitcoin. He literally is saying this on videos on January 1st. My gift to Mexicans is don't buy, and he's don't even use banks. And he is in, and he's so into Bitcoin, it's amazing. On top of that, yesterday, what he was talking about, he just recently made the comments that he might run for president. He would be Mexico's Trump. He would be somebody they can't buy. And he knows the swamp inside and out. He knows the banking. He knows all
this. Let's list it lightly. Mexico's Trump. We don't know. Trump's not really playing.
You gotta understand.
I don't want to digress, but I wanted to say what we're like tie that back in with Bitcoin. Like if you are going to try to build on Bitcoin, you do need to do it in a nation or you need to do it under a regime or whatever law. Like I don't think like there's certain things you should do with Bitcoin, cause they're looking for that right now. Like I think they were talking about all the IRS people that they just fired. They're trying to hire back people as fast as they can. Like, you know, so. They want to have KYT, which is know your transaction. So if you are going to do things like, you know, whatever, like build on Bitcoin, like just, you know, code is one thing. That's a whole nother realm. But if you're actually going to use it in the market, just if you're running nodes and stuff like that, make sure you have privacy, like understand it before you start running it. And like, you know, I'm not talking about mining. I'm talking completely like using the network because it is expensive. Like people don't realize like this isn't something you short. This is a very long thing and you have to make connections with people and you have to educate people. So like it's in yourself as well. So I think that, once you get there, I'm not talking to somebody who just got in the market or just came to Bitcoin. I'm talking about somebody who's been in the market and they're bored and they want to build on Bitcoin and like not build on Bitcoin and code. Cause that's not my thing. I'm just talking about network effect in your personal tiny community life. You could be that Bitcoin, whatever person, you know? So I think the meetup things you're talking about, the renting space is actually genius. Just to kind of get the question going.
They're actually having an impromptu meetup and it keeps growing. That'll be next weekend here in La Paz. But yeah, it's just interesting to me that Salinas, I don't trust any politicians. I don't trust Trump. I just plain don't trust them. But at the same time, I think some of them will do the right thing because they love being loved or they just, you know, there's no reason not to in their minds. I think Trump is actually doing the right thing, but I don't know. We'll see how far it goes. And the same with Salinas. But the thing is, these billionaire businessmen run it like a business. And to me, I think that's the way countries should be run. And, you know, this waste is just absolutely insane. And the U.S. government, it's absolutely criminal is what they've done. And it's insane. Now, America, what I've always joked about is Mexico and America are more similar than you realize. It's just that Mexicans knew their government was cartel. They know their police are corrupt and they know their news is propaganda. That's what they call it. 30 years ago when I moved here, I'd say, yeah, same thing. And people didn't believe me because they think America's so clean. I'm like, no, it's not. I've known this since I was a kid. I did.
They're all corporations.
Well, it's worse than that. I mean, the CIA in the 70s were stealing cocaine in its own country. Your own government was part of one branch.
That's why
one branch is trying to keep it out. One branch is trying to bring it in. This is what's so insane. They're taking money on both sides of every war. They're making money on all this shit. It's fiat games. It has nothing to do with your safety, your protection, America first, none of that.
Well, it's drug cartels.
Yeah, well, it's another way of doing, you know, corrupt business. And so I joke about Mexico or America's got cartels all over. You got a pharmaceutical cartel, a food cartel. Look at everything's being controlled. But the reality is, you know, just everybody around the world. I don't know anywhere that you can say, oh, this is perfect. There isn't, you know, so keep your eyes open. Don't be a victim of wherever you live. And I don't believe everybody in America is going to be necessarily in a civil war or huge problems. But I do believe that cities, because of the supply chain, are going to be the first problem in most. And they just had problems in Puebla. And people are saying, oh, that town is corrupt as hell. It's the second biggest economy in Mexico. I would not go there. I know too many people that have escaped, Mexicans that have left because of huge thievery. I mean, trucking and tractors and giant equipment being stolen at gunpoint. It's insane what goes on. It's the wild, wild west. And they don't ever put this shit in the news, by the way. There's a lot that goes on in Mexico. But here in Baja, it's like different.
Of course not.
You know, it's like I live in Alaska, Mexico. So it's like talk to people in Alaska. They don't see what you guys see. It's about being more rural. And I don't mean everybody has to move. But, yeah, if you really don't want to be a victim of life, being rural makes it easier. That's for sure.
Yeah, that
get
is
away
true.
From the fray. All right. Respect for everybody's time. I'm going to wrap it up here. Thanks for joining, Rico, Pub, Neil, Coleman, AC, Jimmy, and, Texas Toast had to step off. We'll be back here tomorrow, 1000 hours Eastern Standard Time with special guest Mayan Bitcoin tomorrow, Thursday, 10 a.m. Bob will be back, co-hosting along with Texas Toast. Thanks everybody. Have a great rest of y'all day.